Thanks for taking some time, Paul. What's at the top of your to-do list heading into the off season?
I guess assess to start the clearly an unusual year for all people, not just hockey players. Go back and take a look at your year. We'll do just kind of an overview on a bunch of different areas. We look at all the analytics and things of that nature. Then you move very quickly to what's next and the direction, areas that you think you need to improve on ice with the personnel that you have now. But then certainly there's lots of work to be done on every NHL team with free agents and players that'll leave you and players you'll look to bring in. So the first thing we'll do, Ken, is take a real hard assessment on our year, where we think the players are at as individuals, how they fit, and then start moving forward with anticipating what may happen in terms of free agency.
I know you're early in that process, but how do you assess the year and everything that your group went through?
Well, it you know what? There were so many days that what you were left with was a kind of an inspired feeling of the character of a lot of the people that you had. There were so many, and it's all well documented, but there were so many events that were unexpected and could have been catastrophic in a lot of ways. But the players didn't let that happen. And we had some losses this year that you walked off the bench thinking that there wasn't left much left for your hockey club to do. And then, of course, you had some in the end or where you thought you could have and should have been better. But I'm going to look at this as a year of great resilience by that group. And I'm really, really proud of the way these guys continue to fight, like in situations that I mean, understandable that the weight of what they were going through would have slowed them down, but it didn't. They kept fighting. So that'll be what I'm left with.
Thank you very much.
Next, we'll move to Sean Reynolds.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing?
Good, Sean. Thanks.
Paul, I know you just talked about it. I know there's a lot of assessment to be done, but off the top of your head, what are the areas you think this team needs to be better in next year?
Well, there wouldn't be, I mean, we had a great focus on a defensive part of our game because of how we came into the summer, and then the two players, the two, really important pieces that we lost really do affect your game. But most of the analytics will tell you that there are defensive components to our game that you'd like to see get better. Our goaltending was very strong. That's not an area of concern for us. What we gave up in certain areas of the ice. But we expected that. When you get through training camp and you have the group that you have going in, we knew that we were going to give up some things defensively, and we adjusted to those and did a really good job in terms of forcing dumb pucks and gaps and all the technical parts of the game defensively. So there's some obvious areas that we need to improve, and what we do in front of our net and what we create in front of their net would be the two most glaring 5-on-5 areas. We got much better at how we moved the puck out of our end and how we entered into the other zone. There's a drop off from last year to this year in a number of key analytics, zone times, things of that nature that we'd like to see our hockey club improve on. Those would be that's the hockey part of it, yeah.
Results-wise, sometimes, taking a step back, from where this team was, let's say 2 years ago, can potentially have negative effects on the psychology of a hockey club. And you can look back at those years and say, kind of, that was the year we started maybe heading in the wrong direction. How can you take, and you've touched on the resiliency of your group, and you like a lot of what you saw. So how can you take a year like this and use it to make your team a better team who gets better results going forward?
Well, part of it is that that idea of you know, building your tank, building your capacity. So the challenges that they faced and met in so many ways and survived. I don't know if you can excel in that environment, but you can certainly survive. I would take a player like maybe Nick Ehlers, who I thought, especially in January and February, in so many ways turned pro, right? He's not a big guy, but you'll remember the Getzlaf fight. And he's, you know, in that Calgary series, his game got better and harder and all the things that, that he had been working toward, not just to get that first goal, but when you saw him score and you saw his play after his first goal, those are the players that that come of age and they're no longer young players. And so many of them, I think up until this year had been, you know, we were very, very young up front, but we had always had a real kind of, for the most part, a veteran big D core to kind of support that youth. And then that kind of disappeared for us this summer. So it was a lot was more pressure was put on those young guys up front and a lot of them improved their game. And that would be the most frustrating thing for the season, Sean, for me, wasn't to all the unusual kind of unpredictable things that happened, is that they had paid a price and kind of got to the point where we had hoped we could get to, and that was in February and March, and got healthy. And then, you know, we saw what happened after. But that would have been the most frustrating part. The positive is they lived through it. And there's an awareness there. So nobody's happy when you lose, right? Everybody's god-awful mood for the longest time. But in the very preliminary exit meetings that we just started to get into, there's an awareness in your leadership core that there's a lot of good, right things. And we would be hopeful and expecting that we wouldn't suffer through the same kind of challenges that we had this year next.
Thanks, Sean. And I'll move to towards Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for doing this. Question about your blue line. By my count, pardon me?
I lost the first part, but I got the part where you were going. Go ahead. Sorry.
Gotcha. So just big picture question about the blue line. By my count, you guys used a ton of defensemen this year. I think there's six of them that played at various points in the lineup that are all UFAs, three of which were in your lineup last Thursday night in Edmonton. I guess, how concerned are you that you may be going through another huge sort of overhaul here of your blue line? And what's your confidence, I guess, heading into next season about what that may look like?
So not a concern, Mike, in that we didn't know that was coming. So the you know, we were kind of up against the threshold of changes on our blue line coming into training camp. And then the Dustin Byfuglien leaving kind of pushed you over that threshold. So we were adding players either from waivers or late signings. So we had a kind of a brand new, and Tucker Pullman coming in. So we had a huge influx of either, I would say, inexperienced guys, but in Tucker's case, that would be, but also players maybe that ended up getting more minutes and more opportunity than, you know, with the exception very probably of Josh Morrissey and his minutes, and at times Dmitry Kulikov, the rest of them are all playing in situations they hadn't before, and it was all brand new to them. And some good men in that mix, and hard men, and I thought they did an admirable job. I really did. How that structure is going forward, I don't have an answer for you yet, because like every group, you're trying to make improvements, but we also had a great big hole that was unexpected to be filled. And that's going to have to get addressed. And it's nearly impossible. And in the situation that we found ourselves, I think it was impossible to address because Dustin's money was still on our books, so we couldn't spend it. And there's no one like him, so you're not replacing that man. There's a lot of holes to be filled on our blue line. And but there's, assuming nobody else retires, we have an expectation of who those guys are going to be, at least the starting core of those guys. And and then we'll do what's available basically in terms of filling the rest of that roster out.
You're good, Mike?
Ask you about Nikolai Ehlers. You said you thought he... Just one more on Nikolai Ehlers, Paul.
I lost the front end of that question again, too. So start over, please.
Just one more on Nikolai Ehlers. You mentioned you thought he really became a sort of a pro earlier this year. It was clear to a lot of us, I think, that he was battling something in this return to play. Can you just, no doubt Nikolai Ehlers is a lot tougher than maybe people give him credit for. Can you give us any insight into what he was dealing with kind of in this return to play?
That was just a groin, and it was a mild groin, and it happened on the Friday, Saturday, I think, before we left to go to Edmonton. So that one was almost all precautionary. He could get through the practice, but he'd get to the three-quarter mark and he'd feel it tighten up. So we'd ask him not to be on the ice. So when he came in the morning, if we didn't feel we could warm that up, we just held him back. So when he got into it, he felt it a little bit during the series, but it wasn't a limiting factor for him. We were very concerned about groins, as were all teams going into this. So we just held him out. It wasn't something I don't think he had to really battle through. He is a tough piece. I mean, Nicky's played with broken bones, so he's a tough man. And he was almost leading our team, I think, in hit attempts in that series. So his groin was fine. He played through it. But that was just almost a precautionary groin injury that he was dealing with.
Thanks, Mike. Next, we'll move to Tim Campbell from NHL.com. Go ahead, Tim.
Hi, Coach. Thanks for taking the time today.
Sure.
The league continues to trend younger. An old team may win the Stanley Cup, but the league is clearly trending younger. And your team clearly is depending on some younger players. What are some of the things that you've done, that you're doing, and you might even be considering to try to, you know, enhance that young player, you know, effect on your team?
Well, we started this, you know, probably 4 years ago, where we got very, very young. And I had alluded to it earlier, the support for those young players up front. And that's where, I mean, you know, we had agreed Morrissey and Trouba were young players as well at the time, but we had some veteran defensemen around them. But that was kind of the underpinning of the group. It bought Connor Hellebuck a couple of years to learn the game at the NHL level. And, you know, we brought in 18 and 19-year-old guys. We had a few players like Kyle Connor spent some time in the minors, but most of these guys stepped out of amateur hockey and are playing in the National Hockey League. So how we kind of survived that early on and actually excelled at that time is that kind of veteran back end. And now these younger guys get a little older. And because they get a little older and they have had some success, they get paid differently, and that changes your dynamic on your blue line as well. So what happens next is they stop being quite as young. And now they're, you know, before the next wave of young players come in, you have some time where you're in that, moving into that middle age, if you will, of a hockey team where you don't, they don't need the same kind of support, right? They shouldn't need the same kind of support, but they can start driving that team on your own. I think you've clearly seen that over the last 2 years of Mark Scheifele, gone from being a good young player to now, and you saw the impact of him being out of our lineup to being a dominant player in the NHL. And that's what we're hoping for and expecting from these still young players, agreed. But all these guys now have experience because we played our young players, right? They got big minutes and big opportunity and had some success with it. And now they become drivers. I don't think that you're going to see just because of the function of maybe where we've drafted, that you're going to see another great big influx of young players. Even though the league is getting young, we were probably at our threshold with youth for the last few years, and now we're going to get the opportunity to enjoy some of these middle-aged young players kind of taking hold of the team.
Also wondering if you might be able to share the tone of some of the exit meetings you've had so far. Thanks.
It would depend on the, again, Tim, we're still really early on. Normally we have most of this done in the first week, but because, you know, a big chunk of our team left right from Edmonton, and then the next group of players, we landed here and most of these players returned home as quickly as they could. So there aren't a lot of players here for face-to-face. So it's just about scheduling that. So it's probably too early to to talk about the tone of them. But it, I mean, to answer your question better, they're always different, right? There are players that that you'll have a very short, very positive meeting with that would say, you know, just keep doing what you're doing because you're heading in the right direction. And there are other players that are going to have to take a long, hard look at their training methods in the summer to get to where they want to be for us to get the most out of them.
Thanks, Tim. Next is Brian Munns. Go ahead, Munzie.
Coach, you mentioned a couple of guys earlier on, and not disrespecting anybody in your room, but is there one or two guys that really took that step for you this year from September, where the season ended off last week, that you're saying, yeah, this guy is really on the right track to be a solid pro?
Yeah, I mean, I think the couple of notable guys up front, Kyle Connor had an exceptional regular season this year, where he almost completely got rid of, I'm going to section off his first month having missed training camp. But past that, you know, there's just not a lot of times that you're grabbing Kyle and saying, hey, you know, your last three or four games haven't been very good. What's going on? He's kind of turned that corner. I thought Andrew Kopp made a huge step forward. He's always been a very, very bright defensive player. His defensive reads are elite. But he's added, you know, another half step to his game through hard training. He's a little bit quicker. And now you're starting to see the hands develop, his power play goal and his offside goal line to the far post. I mean, that's really impressive thing. So we're seeing Andrew go from, I think, being a player that you know, was shooting to play on that third line his whole career, is now taking a step that he could be a piece to in a top six role. With the right kind of players. So those two guys, I thought, especially up front, Neil Pionk is a new player here, but that would be a guy. We had a really strong belief in him as a player, but he would have exceeded our expectations for. So for Neil, this is his first year where in the NHL where he's getting, you know, primary minutes, right? He's driving a power play from the back end and he's playing against the other team's best. And Lord knows he had an awful lot of different defense partners, but that was a guy that would have night in and night out when the coaches are leaving the bench thinking, man, that guy, not only did he play hard, did he perform well. Those three guys, I think, had some really strong seasons for us.
And just for your coaching staff, obviously Woody left this year. How much have you thought about how you'll fill that void and kind of what you're looking for there over the offseason?
Well, we started that process, Brian, right when Todd left, but put it on the back burner until now, and then we'll make that decision going forward. What pieces? Todd did a bunch of things for us. There was a video component to what he did. There was a face-off component to what he did, and some skill work that he did on the ice after. And you know, he was an incredible connector, right? He was a guy that got around to a lot of players and kind of took the temperature of the team for us an awful lot. So it's an important role. How we section that out, it's you got to find the right person to do that, or you have to change roles a little bit and take the best available person that you can find. But there's a lot of flux right now, Brian, in the NHL, and certainly with the COVID scenario out there, I'm not looking to get this done in the near future. Certainly the process will start, but we won't come to a resolution anytime soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Munzie. Next, we'll move to Paul Friesen from the Winnipeg Sun. Go ahead, Paul.
Hey, Paul. In hindsight being 2020, how do you think your team handled the shutdown? And is there anything you think could have been done differently to be sharper, better in that series against Calgary?
Yeah, it's a relative situation, right? So I don't have anything to relate it to say that in the past four or five pandemics, this one was good or bad. I like the way that we had gotten out of it. And I like the way Vancouver playing in that game. I really liked our first game and we felt good. So the practices and the block leading into that, into the tournament, if you will, were really strong and really fast. And we liked our van game and that we looked like we were at speed. And then you have to assess what happens to your team in the next game, because it's a different style of game that's played. And then, you know, I mean, how much weight do you put on your team looking different without Scheifele, Lining, and Appleton? And I mean, the truth of it is, Paul, I'm still trying to assess what that cost was to us, because the next game we played about is, you know, we almost looked like we were back to our regular season form. It was a grinder and we played hard. So in that first block of three games, I really liked two of them. The one that, you know, the first game that we didn't like, we suffered a pretty significant loss early in the game and couldn't, I don't know that we could emotionally recover from that. We all have a great understanding of what Mark means to our team. So I felt confident after the Van game and even after game two that we could look at game one as a game that we underperformed in, and there were some indicators to why that would be. The you know, the next two are, and then there starts to become hockey specific. Is our power play better with Mark on it? For sure. Is our 5-on-5 game better with Mark and Patrick and Mason? And for sure, our penalty killing was very disappointing, but hadn't been in game two. So there was an inconsistency in our game in the tournament, and it was almost alternating nights. The weight that you will put on losing those players will define how you think your hockey team played. But I like the way that we came out of our camp. I really like the pace that we played at in two of those three games, those first three games. So I think we were ready. I think we were right. But we didn't sustain it.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about improvements needing to be made in net front presence, both ends of the ice, I assume you're talking about personnel and is some of that needing more size and grit?
I think so let's separate the two. The first at both ends, we knew that we would spend more time in our end of the ice. And we also knew, because we didn't have nearly as aggressive pinching D, that we would spend slightly less time in the offensive zone. So we knew that going in with the four defensemen that were out. You weren't going to get as many kill plays in your end of the ice where a player gets separated for the puck or it's on a guy's stick, you know, one of those, and they move it a little faster and you're out a little quicker and you're shaving 30 seconds off a night, which doesn't seem like, and I'm not talking about zone time, I'm talking about pure possession time. That's a big number. So we gave up more from the slot that we would like, and we got less from the slot in the offensive zone. Some of that is the style of offensive play, but some of it is just that back end wouldn't keep us in the offensive zone as much as we would like to be, and we spent more time in our end. As in terms of the grit and the bite, I mean, we lost some big men. There's no doubt about that. But that one's a tough one to qualify, because the grit was better displayed in January and February. I'll go back to November too, like the month of November, the month of January, when our record wasn't good, and into February. That's as good a grit as I've seen here. Now, you know, so you got to be careful. I feel I need to be careful about how I present that idea to you, because there was some better grit with this group than in any time I've been here, and we probably had bigger, tougher teams in the years prior. So there's lots of grit here. The size factor, I mean, we lost a 1,000 pounds of defensemen last year, and we're going to want to probably try to get back to that a little bit, but nobody has given up Dustin Byfuglien's, right? They're not there for you to acquire. So intelligent, short of that, you want to get guys that are going to get the puck regardless of who's coming after them. You don't have to be tough. You just can't be afraid. I think we got a whole bunch of good players like that here. And then, like every team, we'll be looking to add that as well.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Fraser. Next, we'll move to Scott Billick, also the Winnipeg Sun.
Morning, Paul. Thanks for doing this. You mentioned Andrew Kopp as one of the players who kind of took a step this year. He's a guy who every year since 2015 when he entered the league is kept taking a step. And he alluded to, or maybe even hinted at, that he wants to take another step, and that step would be moving to second line center. That's a spot that he wants. He says he doesn't need to lobby for it with his words, as he'll do that with his actions and that sort of thing. What do you think of that idea? Is Andrew ready for that kind of second line center role with this team?
So it's almost more of a question of the players that you're going to hang on his wings. So if you're looking for a two-way center, I can understand his argument completely, because they're defensively, on the defensive side, and I'm not talking about a slow grinder that doesn't do anything else but defend, his reads are exceptional. And they have been since the day he showed up. He has that ability to survey a situation and pick up all the options very, very quickly. To get into the second line center, and if you're playing with two kind of dynamic players where they need some defensive support, I think you can do that. But at the same time, those two guys still have to generate, right? If you're going to play Andrew in that role, the wings have to generate offense then, and you have to be a part of that. You're not maybe expected to drive it like Mark Scheifele will drive the offense from the middle, but by being a solid defensive player, spending less time in your own end of the ice, allowing those two other guys to get a little more creative, maybe put more risk in their game, which on the wings at times can be really good. Still have to be able to look at the numbers and say, you know what, these guys produced well with any center there, Andrew Copp or anybody. They have to produce. We're paying them to score. So he's not far off it. We'll take a look at what happens to players when Andrew goes into the middle in terms of what they generate. I think the first step possibly would be a wing situation. But I'm not going to limit Andrew Copp really you see a guy's hands get better sometimes. You see them get stronger, faster over the course of their career for sure. But Andrew seems to be a bit unique in that he's making more plays. And he's making them at speed, and he's not necessarily changing the rest of his game to try to make those plays. So there's a lot of real positives there with him. So I won't limit what he can do with his hands, because we've seen some pretty good examples of them, especially recently.
Sure. And just a follow up. I mean, you've talked a lot about Connor Hellebuyck this year. And you talk about earlier in this press conference about how, I mean, you knew you were going to give up more shots. You knew potentially the defensive structure wasn't going to be where you would want it, or ideally or optimal. Can you kind of quantify how important Connor was to the team this year?
Sure. And I'll do that just in the month of November. And so we had an awful lot of changeover. So the month of October, and we had a tough schedule to start our season. And you'll remember we lost Josh Morrissey, and then Brian goes down. And for me, that was a real potential tipping point for our season. We go into San Jose, and I think the number was 53 that he stopped. And we spent two periods in our end of the ice, and he won us that game. And then we go in on back-to-back and beat LA, or Las Vegas, sorry, and we play a hell of a game on that. And that is the confidence that a goaltender can give your hockey team. So I think he, and his save your season isn't the right thing, because we played hard and played well and competed and made some great strides in that month of November with the player personnel that we had down. So we kind of found our team identity in the month of November, but I don't know, or I guess better, a stronger statement is I believe that Connor Hellebuyck was the reason that was, we were given an opportunity to become a hard team, become a resilient, tough team. That game in San Jose, and then the follow-up kind of month, he was so good in that month. And he gave us a chance, and that's what, you know, that's the cliche that you hear, the goalie's got to give you a chance, but that is true on any given night. I get that. But what Connor did was he gave our team a chance to kind of, you know, get thrown in the lake with a stone and then get your head back up above water and buy you time to get the stone off you and start swimming.
Thank you.
Not a great analogy, but that's what I had for you. Sorry.
Go ahead, Kelly Moore.
Thanks very much, and thank you, Paul, for doing this. Just wondering, with the compressed schedule that is anticipated for 2020-21, how much of that is going to factor into how you now plan over these next 3.5 months and maybe structure your regular season practice plans as well?
So we're all kind of eagerly anticipating what it might look like, and it goes back to kind of the month of June here. You're just dying to find out what the schedule is going to look like. So what are the factors in a compressed schedule? One would be your backup goaltender would become really important to your hockey team, because if you're running consecutive blocks, so what you don't see much more, Kelly, anymore is back-to-back games, a day off, and back-to-back games. It happens kind of rarely in your season, but I think we're probably looking at something like that being more often. Depth for sure, and we're clearly sensitive to depth, being the number of players that we've used over the last few years, and clearly this year. Our practice planning, I mean, the practices that most of these teams are running in the West look quite a bit different than what they're running in the East. We may actually, even though you got a compressed schedule, we actually may end up getting more quality practice time. So potentially you go into a place and they jam 4 or 5 or 6 nights together. There might be more blocks of 2 or 3 days then, especially, I mean, there's all these things we don't know, travel, how that would have worked, but there's a chance we could practice a little bit more. And then everything after that will look almost like a playoff series. You'll put the healthy bodies on the ice for a short period of time, and recovery becomes your primary objective in off days.
And I'm just kind of wondering, did you allow yourself to on Monday before we found out it was the Rangers who won the number one pick, to kind of pencil in what your lineup might have looked like with an Alexi Lafreniere in there?
Well, we all used to get the Canadian Tire Christmas catalog, right? So how I grew up was, you knew you weren't getting anything out of it, but man, you went through every page, right? Circled all the stuff you'd love to have. I also knew I wasn't getting any of it, so it wasn't really upsetting on Christmas morning, right? It was just a fun part. So the answer to your question would be sure. So you had some line combinations and played with some things, but we weren't expecting it.
Thanks, Kelly. Next, we'll move to Jason Bell.
Thanks for doing this. I always appreciate listening to you, talking to you, and we all appreciate sparring with you over the course of the season. But of course, my joy level doesn't necessarily make you a good hockey coach. And your team wins a lot more than it loses in the regular season, Paul. But I guess 7 years now, the club has won 2 playoff rounds. And I guess my question to you is, why are you still the right man for the job in this organization?
So you would look at that, and we would say off the start, the first playoff round that we won 2 years ago was the first playoff round this franchise run. So it was the right guy then. I've been to the conference final 3 times, Stanley Cup final. This year was, I'm going to rate as top 3 years that I've had in this league. And I'll include my staff on that. We did a fantastic job surviving what we went through. Very difficult in this league to develop and attempt to win at the exact same time. Rarely does it happen. And we've just had too many good young players come in whose games have continued to get better and better. And we would have lots of confidence and faith that that will continue going forward.
Appreciate that. And, we had a great opportunity to talk to Brian Little the other day. And, it's a tough situation because there's so many issues, so much bigger than hockey for this man. And you know that better than everybody. But what do you think about his situation? And, I mean, do you have confidence he can be back? Or do you have to plan that he won't be? Because the business goes on in this game.
Right. So you'll separate the two things, the person and the player. From a player point of view, we would absolutely now have to plan going forward that he wouldn't be a player, because we've been doing that since his injury. As a person, you're just, you want a perfect life for everybody. You want perfect health and you want to be able to enjoy your life. So for Brian from the Winnipeg Jets and for me personally, I want his life to be great. And if that means he doesn't step on the ice again, then that's what I want. I don't have the medical answers, and clearly even Brian doesn't have those yet on whether he'll be given an opportunity to be a skater. So we'll just let that happen and hope for the best. But in terms of planning going forward, I mean, we have to look at this as that Brian wasn't a player for us this year for good reason, and that reason wouldn't change, and we have to prepare that he won't be a player for us again.
Thanks, Chris. Have a great summer.
Thanks, Jason.
All right, now that we got the high hard one under the chin out of the way, we'll wrap things up with Murat Ateş. Go ahead, Murat.
Hi, Paul. Good morning. I'm just wondering, you mentioned some of the metrics that had come off this year, zone time, slot shots, all that sort of stuff. In evaluating that and running your assessment, figuring out what worked, heading into the running the assessment you talked about, how hard does it become? Because it's not that you had your full, ideal, healthy team all year running your systems, running it your way. There was so much touch and go throughout that. So what can you honestly learn from the pockets of season that you had?
So we would look at the systems under duress. Let me start my answer a different way. So you're always looking at the National Hockey League for something new, something different, right? Everybody runs fairly close to the same systems. The combination of them makes your team slightly unique, and we all do that based on our personnel. So you're always looking for the next kind of wave. And then the next assessment is, has the personnel on our team changed enough to warrant a style change? So just specifically from 2 years to last year, if you looked at just our gap at our blue line, our defensive gap, and we're one of the elite teams in the NHL this year with the blue line that we had, but we weren't the year before. So there's pieces that go to that. If you're pinching a defenseman in the offensive zone and it doesn't work, you're going to have a harder time holding your line when the other team is attacking. The assessments then are going to be made, what under duress, and the duress for us would be the injuries, the man games lost, and then we lost our number one defenseman and our number two centerman for basically the year. You might lower the bar of the number that is acceptable, but you might really like the results. So there was a number of things that were really good analytically for us, and we will want to keep those. And then there's some things that are going to change. I mean, how we drive our offense has been a challenge for us. We've got a lot of guys that like to make some plays, and we don't put the puck at the net casually. I mean, in terms of option one, and we'll find something after. We look for something until it's not there and then put the puck at the net. So I do think there's a great value in looking at the analytics in terms of how your team played, because it would be far more of a stress test. I think the bigger danger would be, had everybody in your lineup, you had some success, but you didn't look at the holes that kept you from winning. Possibly because they weren't obvious to you. So we will have some obvious things that we don't like. Some of them are based on the personnel that we had this year, and some of it will be based on the changes that we'll have going forward. But there's a value in looking at it maybe more now than ever.
And I guess following up from that, if there's going to be these piecemeal portions that were definitely good, and I'm sure you have your internal metrics, but the public, say, expected goals or shots or what have you, I mean, was near the bottom throughout the season, the ones that you could get from publicly available places anyhow. Do you need more balance in terms of skill sets to drive those middle areas or to generate those sorts of things? And I guess just to clarify where that's coming from, it seems like some of those forwards have some overlapping types of ways that they play.
Right. So can you spread it around and get the desired result? I would tell you, Murat, like so much of all of that is based off shot location from the public data that you get, and so much of that is so far off, it would be very difficult in my mind to draw even a reasonably strong conclusion. So our metrics would be quite a bit different than what's available. But I still wouldn't argue against completely against that metric. We didn't drive offense at net front and at slot. We certainly gave up far more than we would like to, but we were a far, far better hockey team in most of those metrics, because I just don't think the data that you're getting is particularly accurate.